Farm in the Countryside is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, weather or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. You may have seen her farm featured on TV's Shark Tank, where she made a successful pitch to one of the sharks to invest in her operation. Learn how this farmer turned a small farm in northeast Missouri into an enterprise shipping premium quality meats throughout the nation and employing other farmers in the process. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. Performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. And for more information on Pivot BioProven, text PROVEN to 31313. Maybe you've watched the TV show Shark Tank. It allows entrepreneurs to pitch their ideas to investors called sharks who may put their money and expertise into one of those businesses. Lucinda Cramsey is a farmer from northeast Missouri who, at the time, had a small but successful meat subscription business called Moink. She had the opportunity to share her enterprise with the sharks, which is quite a story in itself. But the larger picture is how small farms can not only survive, but thrive. And in this case, it's the idea of bringing smaller operators together to supply a premium product to a specific niche of customers. I think you'll enjoy Lucinda as she shares her story. Lucinda Cramsey is my guest, and you may have seen her on television. She is the CEO and head hen, as she describes it, at Moink. And Moink is a farm at least based in northeast Missouri. Lucinda, I sure am glad to have the chance to visit with you, and maybe you just want to start by giving people a little bit background about where you farm and what you do, because some of them may be familiar with your farm and have even seen you on TV.
Sure. Well, I'm from a little town in northeast Missouri called LaBelle, and Moink is a meat box subscription company. So we aggregate from lots of different farms, including my own, across the country, and then we ship monthly boxes to folks all across the country. On my personal farm, we started out raising hogs. I now raise chickens as the need arose for chickens. I was more desperate for chickens than I was for hogs. So now I am a chicken farmer, which I never thought I would say, but here we are. And yeah, we aggregate from all kinds of small family farms. It's something I'm very passionate about. I'm an eighth-generation farmer, and growing up, we struggled quite a bit. And it really never made sense to me why the folks that feed Americans sometimes have difficulty feeding their own families. So here I am, grown up, and decided to do something about it. So in addition to providing folks with great quality product, our main driving factor is to give farmers an honest day's pay for an honest day's work.
Well, and I've read some of your background, of course, and then how the brand got started. But take me back before it. Was there any specific event or something you saw that said, what we're doing is not working, we've got to do something else? What was the evolution of the business?
Well, sure. Well, I guess you're going to have to go back to my childhood. In the sense that when I was 11, my father passed away. My mom is a school teacher, but nonetheless, when he died, there's six of us kids, and mother had to work two jobs just to put a roof over her head and, hold on to the family farm. And seeing her struggles there really stuck with me. And then I grew up and moved all over the country, lived on the East Coast for quite some time, and then made my home in Georgia. And that whole time I, met what is now my husband, and we both decided that we wanted to move home. We grew up 45 minutes from each other. And the thing is, when I was in the city, I never would eat pork because I would always say, this tastes like a confinement building smells to me. Personal preference, just didn't care for it. So when we moved home, you know, Adam said, like, you know, what's a guy got to do to get a pork chop around here? And so I said, well, I guess if you raised hogs the way my mama used to do outside, I'll cook you all the pork chops you want. And so anyway, he started raising hogs, and we realized we had this high-quality product, but we didn't really have a market to make it make sense. You know, when you're raising dirt hogs and you're doing them on a smaller scale, the reason you often have confinement buildings is not because someone said it's my life dream to have a confinement building per se. It's my life dream to pay my bills and have my farm, right?
Right.
So there wasn't really a good market for us, and we knew that we had to do something different. And we had friends that were also raising animals kind of on this small-scale agricultural method outdoors. Us farmer folks, we call them dirt hogs. And we just kind of all got together, and, you know, I'd spent years kind of shipping produce, fruits and vegetables. And I said, you know, what if we set it up like we used to do produce and just ship it to folks' house? I cannot be the only person in the city that had that pork chop problem. And sure enough, I wasn't. There are plenty of people around this country that really do want some high quality product and are willing to pay the price to also allow a farmer to make an honest day's pay.
So how do you make that jump then? Because I think a lot of farmers out there say, you know, I can, they've been growing livestock and crops and so forth for a long time. But how did you then transition to identifying those consumers? Did you have to build a website? How do you begin to make that? Because that's a pretty big leap, and a lot of times it pushes people into things that they've never done before.
Well, I think we need to have a frank conversation about that. The joke is, if you want a farm, you either inherit it or you marry it. You know, people don't just go out and become farmers. I will tell you that my husband's an engineer, and I, for years, had an off-the-farm job, and we bet literally the family farm on making this happen, right? And so I am acutely aware that a lot of farmers are really trying to take care of their farm and pay their bills, so making that jump is not that easy, because you might be able to raise dirt hogs, but who will buy them? And therein lies the problem that Moink is trying to solve, you know. But the main thing is, if you build it, they will come. And I think that you have to just put your heart and soul into it. But us rural folks, we doubly have it difficult because we are so far from places where there are enough people to sustain our businesses, right? So, yes, a website is very important, attracting that outside interest outside of our small town. I can tell you here at Moink that we've begun to aggregate, bring on more farmers as we grow. And it's, in a way, very sad. A business like mine has to exist, because the concept of just making an honest day's pay shouldn't be so hard. But it is. JFK once said that a farmer is the only person that buys everything in retail, sells it at wholesale, and pays freight both ways. And I expect that's still true today.
Right. Well, you know, in the introduction, I alluded to you being on Shark Tank, and I'm betting most people listening to us have at least heard of that show and perhaps have mm-hmm. seen you. So tell me where you were at in that process when you got the chance to go on that show. And at that point, what was it you were needing? Had you tried to get on for a long time? Did they contact you? I think people are always interested, and I know it happens in a variety of ways if you happen to appear on that show.
Oh, yeah. I've renamed it the Fight Club because I feel like we were fighting. Actually, serendipitously, I had been invited to a Google for Entrepreneurs conference, and my sister went with me, as well as a dear friend of mine from Putnam County, Missouri, actually. And we're a wild bunch. I mean, we're crazy Missouri farm girls, and we were it was a competition, and we were just having a good time. But I tell you, it's a long and a story we may not have time for today, but I will tell you, it was a 60-page application, and I didn't think I could fill out that many pages, and I kind of drugged my feet, and at the last minute I did it. Then they told me no, and then I told them I didn't take no for an answer because I filled out their 60 pages. They contacted me. I wasn't going to play this game. I did what they asked, and anyway, long story short, it all worked out in the end. And you know, next thing you knew, I found myself on a plane going to California, and I had never watched the show before I was on it. So I didn't really know what I had signed up for until, like, you know, they had contacted me. I kind of looked into it a little bit. And, you know, the behind the scenes is their auditing process is probably 10 times worse than the IRS. I mean, they turn over everything. And, you know, I just was afraid I would embarrass my family or something. But you are who you are through and through. So I couldn't hide that. So I tried to be sweet and kind in the beginning, but things went off the rails and they got snarky and I gave it right back to them.
I've got to tell you, I appreciate it. People need to watch the segment if they have not, because you have a what I would call a good spunky attitude on that show, and it got your deal. Talk about the deal you got.
Yeah, so ironically, the night before, they tell you who's going to be in the room with you, and they said, well, they sent an email, and here's who's going to be the sharks, if you will, and one of them was a Jamie Siminoff, and my friend Lacey, again, she's from Putnam County, she was with me. She said, hey, you might be interested in this shark. He's self-made. And I said, yeah, new money. I said, they always get kind of arrogant when they've taken an idea and got real rich real quick. I guess I'm not interested. I ain't talking to him. And man, do I have to eat my words, because I went in that room and I don't know, just wanted to kind of explain what farmers are up against and tell my story. I can't say that I was actually do or die, get a deal or don't, you know, but I was grateful to have a voice. And at the end of the day, Jamie Siminoff, who invented a Ring doorbell, and in season 5 of Shark Tank, he'd gone on and they didn't invest. Well, he ended up selling to Amazon for $1 billion. And they brought him back right as a guest shark, and he invested into Moink. And actually, he's a wonderful human. He's bought a farm here in Northeast Missouri. We're neighbors now. So,
oh wow,
that's how that world worked. Yeah, we invited him out. He came to the farm, saw how we do things, and met people. And he kind of choked up and said, "Man, I've never met people like this." And I said, "Well, welcome to the Midwest, honey. That's how we do it here." And so he ended up buying a farm. His son loves it here. His wife loves it here. So that's how that came full circle. Invested in Boykin and gained a family in the process.
Well, neat. So what did that being on that show then do for you? As you look back, you were already doing things pretty well, but did that totally transform things? And man, the business came for everywhere. What did that experience do for you?
Yeah, two things happened. One, yes, our business exploded overnight. Two, farmers came out of the woodwork explaining their problems. And I will tell you that as we grew and I kept trying and we'd bring on new farmers, I one lamb farmer I'd been talking to, and I finally got to the point we'd grown where I could call them back, say, I'm going to buy all your lambs. I called them. I was 2 weeks too late. They had gone bankrupt. I dry heaved because I know. I mean, listen, on average in the United States in 2018, the average on farm income was a loss of $800. That tells you that farmers, 90% of us have an off the farm job, myself included, because I run Moink in addition to raising chickens, right? That means that we have a job to pay for our farming habit is usually how that works out. So, yeah, it exploded my business. We are now a team of about 100 different farms across the country. But it also just shined a light on the real problems with agriculture in the United States. And really, it just encouraged me to say, well, we just got to keep going. And of course, we had the pandemic, and so at the start of this year, that also catapulted us because we are small family processors as well. And so here, a lot of the larger plants were shutting down in the country, and we kept working. And so then, you know, Shark Tank happened in 2019, and we grew 500%. And then this year, coronavirus happened. We grew 500%. But with that growth also comes struggles. But nonetheless, that's kind of our story. Where there's a will, there's a way. And we still have our headquarters here in Northeast Missouri, in Newark, Missouri, 94 people. And many people in this world have tried to get me to move my operations, my offices or my shipping facilities to one of the bigger cities. But I feel like Moink is not just on the side of farmers, we're on the side of rural America. And so I'm here to, it's kind of a personal thing of hold my coffee, watch this. Yes, we can run this business from a small town. Yes, we can be successful in rural America. No, we're not just a bunch of, you know, ignorant rednecks running around or whatever bad rap we get sometimes. So to me, that's been one of the things I'm most proud of is to say, you know, born, raised, and still hail from this small town.
Right. Right, right. No, that's very important. Whenever you are looking at the farmers that are a part of your group and helping supply you, is there a certain type of farmer, a certain type of production method? What is it that you like to look for in a good partner for a farmer that's going to be producing for Moink?
Yeah, so right now, except for the chicken, the farmers that we brought on were already growing to our specs, but maybe needed a market. So we're grass-fed and grass-finished on our beef. We look for a little bit different genetics than what you look for on a grain finish, just because grass-fed is a whole different animal, all puns intended. That's on the beef, on the pork, and the lamb is the same way. On the pork, we do a non-GMO dirt hog. And on the chickens, this is one place we had a heck of a time because our chickens that we supply with Moink are all raised outdoors, yard birds, if you would. No confinement buildings. Well, listen, there's not a lot of people that grow chicken because there's no sale barns for chickens, right? 99% of the chicken market is raised in confinement buildings in the South, and they're owned by Tyson, Purdue, all these big names. So what we did is take some of our farmers that were maybe growing a different species and say, would you like to add chickens to your rotation? We come up with these chicken tractors that you raise outdoor, put outside. And like I said, next thing you know, I'm raising birds. So then we found some people that in their younger days, they could remember that their grandparents raised chickens or turkeys and said, okay, well, how do we get this institutional knowledge back? So it's kind of a complicated answer, but it depends on the species. Yes, we do lean towards the grass-fed, and the grass-finished is what we sell. But as far as how we build out that farmer network, it always depends on the processor. And it's pretty complicated, right, because you've got all these different species. But somehow it's just kind of all worked out, and I really don't know. We just did what was in front of us, took it one day at a time, what is today's problems, and set about fixing them.
The production methods that you use, has that been mostly in response then to what consumers are looking for? Was it a niche that you were already growing for, or how did that come about? Because certainly a lot in ag communities don't necessarily, not that they're wrong or bad, but we have different production methods. So how did you settle on some of those things? Was it mostly consumers' feedback?
Yeah, I'm going to start by saying, number one, I really hate this idea of farm shaming. And I see that a lot in these like organic circles or grass fed of this way's better, that way's better. And I always try to give a voice of, yes, Moink offers grass fed and grass finished. But at the end of the day, I'm a farmer. And all a farmer really is looking for is to be able to hold on to their farm and provide for their family. So I just always like to make that clear that I am no fan of farm shaming and I don't stand for it. There is no reason to judge. I mean, it's a market-based thing, right? So in regards to why we went with these methods, yes, one, it was a consumer trend. But secondly, we found we could get more production out of our land. When you run something called regenerative agriculture, which essentially is kind of a different management technique, running the chickens with a high nitrogen over a certain area, running the grazing, high intensive grazing, rotational grazing, it just allowed us to get more production out of a smaller parcel of land and less inputs. You know, we all know the price of what it takes to you know, put in a crop. So if you are a small farmer just starting out, getting into large agricultural production, row cropping, like I said, you better marry it or inherit it, because you're going to have a hard time affording those upfront costs. Whereas something like raising chickens, you need 6 acres of land, and one of our chicken tractors is about $15,000. That's a far cry cheaper than, you know, growing soybeans. So it's more of an economical thing that kind of pushed us in this. And the trends of the consumer, of course, you know, it started with a pork chop for my personal taste preference. And then kind of grew and morphed into this, like, well, how do we do this and still make money and be at a price point a consumer can afford, et cetera, et cetera.
Who is your typical consumer, do you think?
Yeah, it's our consumer is female with children, wants to do the right thing, wants to help people, enjoy a nice meal, lives in the city. The majority, 98% of our customers are urban. Our big markets are, of course, I'm sure no one will be surprised, New York, California, and Texas.
Do any of them want to come and see the farm? Do you have folks that are coming there because they want to see what you do?
Yeah, of course. You always have that. You people are very interested. I've also had to make it part of my mission to educate people on the real life parts of farming, because maybe they watched a movie and think that's what farming looks like. Whereas what they don't realize is it doesn't ever look that way. I mean, before the cameras came to do some of that Shark Tank special, the neighbor's dog got my daughter's Banty hens. There were feathers everywhere in the front yard. We had a dead hog out in the back that had just died. Well, farm life, it happens. This is real farm life. You know, the mud and the muck and the dirt and the, that's not what you see on TV. But we have found that this is an opportunity to kind of educate people on what real farm life looks like, which is nice. And so, yeah, we've had quite a few visitors. We've had a lot of press come, and, you know, we just treat them like they're our neighbor. Come on in. Usually we try to keep a couple extra pairs of mud boots for folks sitting around. You know, you'd be surprised when people show up to do a farm tour what kind of shoes they got on. So there's that. But, yeah.
What advice do you have for farmers out there that perhaps they are a little bit like you, you know, they are wanting to be able to market better. Maybe they don't have a lot of acreage, and maybe they don't have a large herd or whatever animal they're raising. Do you suggest they try to go out and do something similar to what you did? Is it better to try to join forces with others? What advice do you have?
Ooh, that's a hard one. Well, I expect two heads are always better than one. So it's better to work with your neighbors than against them. So yeah, sure. Partnering's a good idea. I think the best advice I'd ever been given is from my own mother, which is to farm, you must farm with a pencil. In other words, it comes down to what makes sense on paper. And, I don't know. I don't feel like I have a real good advice here, because so much of the market is stacked against farmers. I just, you know, and genuinely happy and proud of people that can make a go of it. But I expect sometimes the hardest part of it is thinking that you're not seen or not heard. I literally did one time have some very interesting conversations with a reporter from some very, very well-known magazines, in which I said, wow, y'all really think that about farmers? You have no idea what we actually do. And so I say that because I wonder if there aren't people out there that are just trying to make things work and go, man, it's just not working. Well, it's not a personal reflection against you as a farmer. The market's broken. The market is absolutely broken. And I do hope that change is on the horizon in terms of, you know, smaller scale agricultural being able to make a comeback. I think the day of reckoning for the small family farm is long overdue. And I do think that if we don't make major changes in this country in regards to agriculture, we are facing down the barrel of a gun of something very scary in the terms of farmers are aging. There is less than 2% of us in America are farmers. We are a shrinking population. We are an endangered species, if you will. So I would say to any fellow farmers that are out there, sit tight, hold tight, don't give up, because truly we are important. We just saw that in the pandemic. You know, small family farms is what stepped up and kept America fed during this crisis. You had the large companies. Smithfield Farms, wholly owned by a Chinese company, produces 60% of the pork in the United States. They culled their animals. So we are the ones that stepped up and kept people fed. So I just would implore any other farmer that's out there, don't give up, don't quit. You are important. And it may seem like it's hard or rough, but just keep on going. Just put one foot in front of the other, I guess, is what my advice would be.
Good, good. Where is Moink headed now? I guess you've had a couple of good years here. You've had a good string. Do you continue to see the growth ahead?
Yeah. I mean, I still raise chickens. I'm going to raise a few more chickens this year. You know, we're going to put a few more birds out there. We're just going to keep doing what we do, one foot in front of the other. You never know. Consumers are fickle, you know, and their memory is short. So we fed a lot of people during this pandemic, and a lot of folks from the East Coast and the West Coast, when the grocery stores had trouble, we put food on their tables. Now, in a perfect world, they would remember us kindly and be loyal. However, like I said, the consumer's memory is short. So for 2021, we have to focus on maintaining the customers that came to us out of a moment of desperation, not being able to find food. Now, this year, we have to make sure we keep them so that we can continue to grow, you know. So that's what's on our mind and focus for 2021, is making sure that the customers we have, we take care of, treat them well, give them a nice product, and that's our plan for 2021.
Lucinda, I've sure enjoyed the conversation. If folks are wanting to learn more, how do they find out more about Moink or find you out there on the web?
Well, Moink's website is Moinkbox, M-O-I-N-K, which stands for Moo plus Oink, in case anybody wants to know where that name came from. Moinkbox.com, but I'm sure any savvy Google stalker or whatever can look up my name or company, and I'm sure you'll find an interview or two or ten in which I didn't say the right things or do the right things, but gave it my best effort.
Well, I sure appreciate this. This has been a fun conversation. I hope that other farmers out there listening to this will take a look at what you've done. It's certainly interesting. And if they've not seen the segment from Shark Tank, they certainly should. It's a good segment, and I really liked your attitude on there. You represented farmers, I think, in a very good light, and you kind of let those those big sharks kind of have it a time or two, and that was kind of fun to watch.
Well, I appreciate that very much, Andrew, and I wish you a very happy day and a happy new year.
So as I mentioned at the end of our interview, if you haven't seen it already, do a quick search for Lucinda's segment about Moink on Shark Tank. You'll enjoy her presentation and how she takes on some of those sharks and shares what she does. And be sure to look her up online at moinkbox.com. You will probably enjoy seeing the business she has built and learning more about the farmers growing meat for Moink. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. Farming the Countryside is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for. The nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.